Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Hawk Talk. We are joined today by George Templeton of VCU Rams Rewind. George, last time we talked was this summer. At that time, we both sort of felt an uncertainty for our future. Let me get this straight. You felt uncertain maybe about VCU's future this season. I felt very confident in St. Joe's future, and I think now we're sort of reversing roles. How's it going?
Well, I felt very confident about VCU before Tuesday night. But I still feel fairly optimistic. But it's good. It's good to be with you. And St. Joe's has kind of put everybody, especially those of us who are not Hawks fans, but wish them well, kind of put everybody through the ringer this year, haven't they?
Yeah, and for those who didn't listen to our preview, which is one of our most listened to podcasts, but George follows very closely, and he also has been through the ringer following this team. I mean, we've just had every single win and loss came down to the matter of a few points. Looking at our losses against URI, 4 points, St. Louis, 3. Loyola Chicago, 3. The only losses we've had that were blowouts were the game against the Bonnies and Dayton, but otherwise it's just been like brutal, gut-wrenching losses. And same goes for wins. Like, the wins have been close too.
Well, I would throw Dayton in there in terms of brutal and gut-wrenching because you did the biggest game on campus for a long time. Led it to half. You had to be feeling cautiously optimistic in the next second half. Let me begin. I can only imagine how I would have reacted to something like that for VCU. It would have been, it would have been very hard not to swear during a fans critical like that. It was just, again, it's been a roller coaster for St. Joseph. There have been so many really great performances, and then so many other performances where you're just left completely befuddled. That this team was capable of what they showed in the good performances, which you can maybe even make that argument a little bit about VCU, but not to the degree you can St. Joe. We didn't go play at Kentucky and should have won like we've done in the first season.
No, I think a lot of fans listening to this tonight are nodding their heads saying, absolutely, Dayton has to be in that head, that that gut wrenching feeling category. Where you're sort of asking yourself on a day in late February, how the hell did we give up the lead we had, and why did we look so god awful in that second half? Just one of the worst performances we've had against a ranked team at Hagen, I'd say, in a while, and it's just unfortunate considering that was probably the last ranked top 25 AP top 25 team we'll see in a few years, I'd imagine, just given the landscape of the A-10 right now.
Yeah, I just that was a tough one. Although I have to admit, I basically after you guys lost the 3 to start, I did mention the Rhode Island, it was the St. Louis game where you had the 20-point lead and blew the lead and lost. That I had to admit to my admin that he was right about Billy Lang and I was wrong, and that was so frustrating. And to be fair to St. Joe, for them to have climbed to 7-7 is actually a pretty good effort because, most teams would have turtled, I think, after what happened at the start of the conference season, and St. Joe's at least won back. But it's still you're gonna be left, and any of us that thought that this was gonna be St. Joe's year, we're gonna be sitting here, in March or April, going, what if? And I may be doing the same thing with VCU, but I think certainly St. Joe's fans will be doing the same thing as well, because that's really what this season is. It's like, what if they had won all 3 of those games, which they could have, instead of losing all 3 to start? Half of this season is gone.
George, I think you're such an interesting person to talk to because of the perspective of, like, you're an outsider. You have a coach right now who's coming in and has really high expectations in Ryan Odom. And it's sort of been like a wait and see kind of thing with the fact that you guys haven't had Trolga, you haven't had Bairstow, you know, like getting like guys back into the rotation was a big thing.
Yeah.
And like for you guys, it's all about like, all right, well, like when will we start to win? And the expectations are sort of shifting. But for us, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's such an interesting thing where like you guys have the talent coming. We have the talent right now. And yes, it's just utilizing the talent.
Well, and the thing is, you know, we didn't have Bairstow because he breaks his foot. We didn't have Bamisil because the whole eligibility business. And we get them both, and then we start the conference with two losses in all, one of which we gave up the record for most points given up to an opponent in the single center ever, and the other one, a team that's almost dead certainty to finish in the pillow fight, a team you guys just defeated the other day. They made 9 shots in a row at the end of the game and made 17-21 in the second half. I mean, scarcely believable type stuff. And this is to a team that is objectively horrendous. George Washington is terrible, and I said it that night when BC lost to them, and they've done nothing but prove me right for the most part since then. So we're both it's weird because again, BCU's higher up in the standings and can still get a bye, but I think we're both sitting in a situation where we're just as frustrated as we are hopeful about our teams, because there have been these losses that are just haunting us and plaguing us every day. Because you look at the standings and you go, God, if we could have just won, you know, this game or these two games, we should have won. How much better off would we be?
No, I mean, the George Washington sort of been a game for us in past years where it's like, geez, they're just like us. Like James Bishop, the guards are just incredible. They yes, score a frenzy. But fortunately, we were able to beat them. But like, yeah, they're usually a thorn in our sides. Bonnies seem to have both our numbers this year.
Both of those games. The first one because they just scraped us from everywhere, and the second one because you have a 20-point lead, and then you have a really kind of have a mini meltdown in the last minute of the first half, and it carries over, and you just stop doing everything that works, and do all of your bad stuff that you were doing when you were struggling earlier part of the season. I can feel your pain on that one. If we will be. Depending on how where this goes, we may be talking about other BC losses to St. Bonaventure that we've had that have been infuriating as well.
Well, for context, that Bonnie's game, and correct me if I'm wrong, did you guys score in like the last 4 or 5 minutes, or was it like I remember there's some sort of meltdown, right?
What happened there was I think we had like 1 field goal in the last 8 minutes of St. Bonaventure. That's why we lost. We actually didn't score the last 6 minutes against Dayton and won, which is insane, but that it really did happen. And I really did see it happen. And I've relived it many times since because it was just so incredible.
Yeah, that Dayton win had to have felt good. We got to talk about that, ladies and gentlemen. We got to talk about that Dayton win. VCU pulling out the win, one of the lowest scoring matchups of the year for I think probably any team in the A-10 this year, 49-47 at the Siegel Center. Just love to see it.
It was, again, I'm wired to enjoy wins like that because I've always been a defense-first basketball-type fan. And the way they stood and just repelled Dayton over and over again, you can't believe it's the same team that got tore up by Massachusetts the other night, but it did. And it was just an incredible effort by everybody that put the uniform on tonight. But then when you see that, and we see the game against Richmond, you know that they won and they muzzled Richmond's on. They muzzled Richmond's rather usually efficient offense, and then they go and do that Tuesday night against Massachusetts and get flattened. I can't believe it's the same thing sometimes.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. It's like there's no nights off in the A-10, and a team like UMass, who hasn't necessarily done great this season, can come out and give you some big problems. That's a weird arena to play in.
Right after UMass lost to Pagola, too, by the way. And doesn't that make you laugh? You talk about St. Bonaventure, you can't beat them. BCU can't beat them. LaSalle brushed them aside like it was nothing at Pagola the other day. I mean, it's
laughable. Just classic A-10, just shenanigans. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. I just that is something. I didn't realize that. Yeah, just UMass. That's a tough loss for you guys.
Other than the McNeese State game, and you can't even say the McNeese State game was bad as that. That is about as close to a 40-minute ass kicking as we got since Duquesne kicked the crap out of us last year up there.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Like, somehow UMass has found its way into the fifth seed in the Atlantic 10, right?
And pass the tiebreaker over VCU, so they still, the door is cracked. They probably got to win out UMass to get it, but the door is slightly cracked for them to get a double bye.
And that double bye, I mean, George Mason's kind of that. I don't think George Mason could do it unless they somehow creep in and went out.
Well, they've got the tiebreaker over them, so it's really hard for Jordan Mason.
Yeah, well, it's just the top of the A-10 is sort of, I mean, Richmond, Loyola, Dayton, right? Just an interesting season we're all together having. Loyola Chicago, I think, and well, no, I can't even say just Loyola Chicago. You have to include Richmond in that conversation. Both, by and large, far exceeding any expectations for either team.
Yes.
And don't seem to show any sign of letting up.
Yeah, well, and again, here's the funny thing. There's BCU in fourth, and they've beaten the top three. Granted, they've beaten them all at home, but they've beaten the top three this year. And yet they're in fourth place because they've stubbed their toe into places that they've stubbed their toe. I mean, that's the thing. With Loyola Chicago, this is what I'm going to say. And I mean, and you could argue they've already had it because they lost a 2-point game to Richmond to start the conference, at the start of conference play. But it's like they have won so many damn close games with Loyola Chicago that at some point, and I feel like it could happen in the tournament, that they're going to get one of these and get beat. Maybe it'll happen before the tournament. Maybe it'll happen with George Mason on Saturday. I don't know. But it's like, Loyola Chicago is amazing. It's just like, except for that Spiders game, if it's a one or two possession game, they've won it almost without fail.
I had to look up the metric. Loyola Chicago, 35th in the nation for luck.
Yeah, that's the close game metric on Kenpom, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just like how many games that they were projected even not to win, or close games too. So I agree with that. I feel like their record isn't, it's great, and you have to give due credit where credit's due. You know, Drew Valentine, I think probably doubled at this point the number of wins they had last year in conference play.
Yeah, I mean, they literally could go from worst to first, which is, I mean, it's the portal era, so maybe it's going to start happening more often, but it used to be something you'd say was impossible.
Yeah, it's impressive to think about how much of a difference a year can make. And then Richmond, I mean, Chris Mooney's just coaching really well, but lost to UMass.
Yeah, no, that's right. And UMass beat them soundly at the Robin Center. They won that game going away. They were impressive. But yeah, Richmond, I mean, they're another one. They just and you saw it. I mean, I watched them in that tournament down in Florida. They should have beat Colorado. They were the better team for most of that game, and they just didn't. They just a couple of plays they didn't make down the stretch. They won the consolation game. I'm like, okay, this Richmond's better than I thought. And they were pretty good against Florida. I mean, they lost by 11. That was a neutral site game. That was a much closer game than what the score indicated. And so you saw signs of it with Richmond, but no, I think it was Torvik had them seventh in the season, in the preseason. I remember saying to the three big league guys when we were doing a preview on my pod, yeah, I'm not buying Richmond is going to be that good. And that Jordan King is unbelievable. All of DC did a good job on him the first time. But Quinn has embraced his role. And he's so perfect for that offense. And John Bailey, probably Richmond's best player on the night they lost to VCU. He's been tough. Hunt is tough. They've done magnificently, Richmond. And, you know, I'm hoping VCU will continue their mastery over them at the Robin Center, but I can't be sure of it.
Yeah, it has to be more fun for you as a VCU fan when Richmond's doing well. I'd imagine, like, there's almost no other team in the conference that makes it fun when both teams are doing well.
I mean, I'm enjoying it, yes, because it means that the rivalry games are going to really mean something. And that's always good. And to be honest, after they tan VCU's hides in the tournament and beat up VC, there's no running out of bitterness in them that wouldn't want. I mean, I hope we get to play them in the tournament in some round, because that's got to be made up for. There's no amount of regular season wins over them that can make up for here's the tournament in D.C. and all these D.C. fans make a trip up and they're turning around after one day and going back because Richmond kicked their teeth in. And then Richmond went and won the tournament, which made it 50 times worse.
Yeah, that would be cool to see. So I guess, you know, I've asked you a few times or just a few different ways about like how you feel about the season, but, like, you know, more than halfway over conference play, how do you feel Ryan Odom's adjusted or is adjusting to Atlantic 10 play? And, like, how do you see this team shaking out?
Well, I want to be careful because I don't want the last game to color it. Because I was furious with Ryan Odom in the last game. I thought against UMass he did a terrible job. And Frank Martin, you know, kind of pants him in that game. Here's where I'll give Ryan Odom the most credit. I think he started out the season wanting to play the way he played at Utah State. You know, he said that our offensive system is an open shot's a good shot, and we want to take the first open shot. I think he wanted to play fast. I think he wanted to take a lot of threes. I think he wanted to be kind of a run and gun offense. And that opening loss game, loss to the Keene State, it was pretty clear that wasn't going to work. And there was a few more other situations where you could argue maybe he tried it, but I think he adjusted from there. They became a much better defensive team. And then we kind of got back into that. We kind of got back into that, after Orlando and in the late part of the non-conference season. And then you get those two games at the Siegel Center where we give up 89 and 82. And at that point, I'll be honest, when they lost to GW, I said, maybe we're a qualifying team. Because that's how bad they were defensively, and it was not working. And they completely pivoted and went from being one of the worst defensive teams in the country over a stretch of games, being one of the best defensive teams in the country, starting with that win at Mason, where they won 54-50. And he's kind of conceded to that. He's more conceded to, because I think he liked a shorter rotation. But now that he's got all these players, I think he's realizing that the way to win is to overwhelm teams with depth and wear them down. And for the most part, they've done that. And I think that's something that's important, that's probably not in his type. I don't think he's the type of guy that wants to play 9, 10, 11 players. But we've got the talent to do that, and we should, because you wear teams down by doing that. Wear teams down by not giving away possessions, offense and defense, and working your offense, and tiring them out so they don't have the lift on their jumper at the end of the game, like George Mason, when they've been 0-15. And, you know, that was – DC contributed to that with their play as much as good with their good defense. The rest of the season, like I said, before Tuesday night, I was very bullish. I thought we could absolutely win the rest of these games and grab the conference title. Except for the St. Louis game, I thought we played very well in most of these games in this winning run that we were on. Even St. Bonaventure. First 18 minutes at St. Bonaventure were really good. But that Massachusetts game and just the way they lost was so bad. My only hope is I've watched this team get blown out like that before and really respond well. In 2022, Bacon came into the Siegel Center and kicked BC's teeth in and busted their ass all over that arena for 2 hours, beat them by 30. BC won their next 8 games and nearly won the conference title as a result. Last year, Duquesne actually punked us up in Pittsburgh. And pay no attention to the final score. That they belted BCU from almost the minute one, capped off by the former BCU guard Trey Clark throwing the ball off the backboard and dunking it. And then BCU went and won, 14 of their next 16 games in conference play and ended up winning the conference championship, regular season and the tournament. So I've seen BCU respond before. BCU can respond like that, then they can get to 14-4 and maybe even still steal this conference. Who the heck knows? But that's the big test for Ryan Odom. Is every other BCU team's had a loss like this, and they've come storming back and responding with full force. Well, that's what's got to happen here.
Yeah, responding with full force. I don't love the matchup for us coming off of that UMass loss for you guys, even though we're coming off a GW win and hopefully have a little bit more momentum with Kreese back and Casper Klozek playing some good basketball. That's a tough matchup now we have looking ahead of us. And I think the best outcome for VCU from an outside perspective is for Ryan Odom to do what you sort of described, be that sort of guy who grinds you down, because he knows how to coach offense, but defense has always been VCU's identity from my perspective. And so if he can have the VCU, Havoc style defense play, just grind your nose down, 49-47 win over Dayton, and also give the green light to guys like Shulga, get Joe Bamisil to run things. I mean, you guys are going to be a hard team to. That's just a tough matchup. And like you're saying,
You know what you've got? The Curtis? You've got big, beefy guys down below, and that's what they've struggled with. Chad Benning, his breakout was last year against ECU at the Siegel Center. He stopped that winning streak after they had lost to UK. That was the team that stopped the winning streak after that. Chad Denning's been a problem for us. Matt Cross and Josh Cohen just wore us out. So, Priestess Isondico and Rashir Fleming and Klochik, that could be trouble for us if we don't play well defensively. And really, to me, that's what this comes down to. St. Joe's is supremely talented offense, great shooters, big guys down low that can hurt you. Is VCU going to get back to that defensive level that they were at before the St. Louis game? They were one of the better defensive teams in the country and moved about 70 spots in defensive efficiency up into the top 40 in defensive efficiency. And if they're not, St. Joe's has the horses. They have the firepower to win this game.
Yeah, Chad Venning also gave us quite a game. So I hear you, like that's tough. And I think you're right. I think if we're going to win, the difference maker will be the like Priest and Rashears and Caspers, because our guard play is great, but like the thing that will drive us towards being at the next upper echelon at the end of this season, and that, that being said, like upper echelon, like what's that mean? It's going to be Kreese and Rashear. I mean, that's what it is. Eric has to play well. He hasn't been playing himself recently. It was nice to see him sort of knock some major free throws down for us and have 20 points. I mean, but he hasn't been the Eric Reynolds of that we know Eric Reynolds is capable of. But yeah, like it'll be an interesting matchup for sure. What are your expectations for the game? Who do you have?
See, I'm hoping that these gonna bounce back, because by and large they have, when they've had losses, especially bad ones. So I'm trusting that Ryan Odom's gonna see these last two games they play, because again, I'm telling you now, that St. Louis game, they won that was not a good game. Giving up 85 points to St. Louis, I don't care how good their offense has been and what kind of players they've got. That's one of the worst teams in this league. Giving up 85 to them is not good. And I'm hoping that they're going to reestablish themselves defensively. They're going to reestablish themselves on the boards. That was another thing. They've lost this year. They've gotten bludgeoned on the boards. They got bludgeoned by UMass on the boards the other night. And I'm hoping, I'm going to trust that VCU at home with a hot crowd, because that's the other thing. You know, this team needs a hot crowd to get its energy up. If they're playing like at UMass, and you know this well, unless that place is completely filled, it is, you don't get much atmosphere in that hockey arena up there in UMass. And they were flat. So I'm hoping there'll be a good crowd, even though it's a Sunday, which is kind of unusual, and that they'll get VCU going. And I expect, I shouldn't say I expect VCU to win. I think if they don't win, that's going to tell us a lot about, hey, Ryan Odom beat this team.
Yeah, St. Joe's have a tough time on the road this year. I mean, two losses again to Loyola and Duquesne. We have VCU and we have Richmond left away. Tough matchup. Personally, I think you need a really good game from Kreese. You need to control the defensive, offensive rebounding, and it needs to be a high scoring game. I think if it's a slow half court grind, it's gonna go VCU's way. The slower the game, I think that'll trend more in VCU's direction.
I totally agree with that. I mean, and that's what's, I can't imagine that Ryan Odom ever thought he would have a team that was down near the 300s in tempo. But that's where VCU is. And I've been curious. I mean, I'm looking now to see where St. Joe's is in terms of that, because I'm guessing that St. Joe's tempo is a lot faster. Yeah, their tempo is 129. So it's that's light years quicker than VCU this year. So I am absolutely in agreement with you in terms of how fast the game's got to be. They don't want to try to play this game on St. Joe's terms. They're going to get beat.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, interesting stuff coming up. Sunday's matchup at 5 p.m. Siegel Center. 4 p.m. Sorry, 4 p.m. Siegel Center. All right. So while I still have you here, George, I think I'd be curious to see, and I'm putting you on the spot here, who's your dark horse team in the Atlantic 10? Not named St. Joe's, not named VCU, because we talked about a good bit of teams today, and I think there might be a dark horse, you know, with Atlantic 10 play coming up, with the tournament coming up. Who's your dark horse?
I'm trying not to let my own self-interest show here, because I have to find a funny Twitter interaction with the Belt Report and Davidson. And Davidson, they were talking to the Belt Report, was kind of promoting the fact that they might be the only team that's playing all the top three at the end of the season. And I'm saying, go Wildcats, for obvious reasons. But honestly, I mean, it's got to be St. Bonaventure, just because of the fact that if they get that fifth seed, they draw VCU, they're going to think that they're a great chance to get to the semifinals. And I know that they've had some awful, terrible, and dumb performances against some of the bottom tiers in this league and all that. They still have Charles Pride. They still have Daryl Banks. They still have Chad Benning. They still got the horses to go to Brooklyn and win. They do. And so I gotta say St. Bonaventure. I don't want to believe that for obvious reasons. And it would intensely infuriate me if that's what happens. But at the same time, they've shown you against some of the better teams in this league that they're capable of. They fought tooth and nail at the arena. So, you know, you got to look at St. Bonaventure. I mean, they were awful at Richmond right after they kicked the river in. But you got to look at St. Bonaventure to say, in terms of talent, in terms of being a dark horse and having the talent, they do have the talent to go to Brooklyn and win four games, if that's what it takes.
I think that's an excellent team, and it's so funny that, like, at the beginning of the year, I think the Bonnies were pretty much chosen 1, 2, or 3,
yeah,
to finish the league, and like now they're I think maybe Mark Smith's playing chess right now when everyone else playing checkers, trying to get that the bid that he wants, or trying to get the seed that he wants.
I mean, it's so frustrating. And I'm guessing you too, because that was a game that was fairly close, like late in the first half, wasn't it? Then all of a sudden, St. Bonaventure just dropped. It felt like they dropped the safe on you guys, and all of a sudden it was like a 20-point game and a flip of an eye. What I seem to remember about that game Friday night.
Oh yeah, Mark Schmidt owns us at the Riley Center. I mean, he like he's. Yeah, that's a great way of describing it. Dropped a safe on us. And yeah, everything collapsed. That last, it's almost akin to what happened to you guys, but just to such a higher degree. Like, our guys just did not look good in the last, like, 10 minutes of play. And they were just having a dunk fest. It was not good.
Yeah. I don't want it to be St. Bonaventure because it drives me bananas if it does. But they're a scary team, I think, for most everybody in this league. But again, talent wise, they've got big time players. They just have to put it together. But again, they could also lose to LaSalle on Wednesday and be out before the quarterfinals easily. They just lost to LaSalle just the other day, for goodness sake.
Yeah, it's interesting. All right, I have one more question, and I think I'll ask it to you because it's gotten enough traction, at least recently, from announcers from throughout the A-10 that I think I can ask it with some degree of, like, okay, this is a question that people are talking about. How many bids do you think the Atlantic 10 ends up with at the end of the season?
I'm going to say 2, but I think Dayton will be not good for them. Even though I've admired them, and I kind of feel like I've seen, I'm sure you've seen this on social media. I've seen it on Twitter saying, "Oh, Dayton's not that impressive. What have they really done?" I think that's bunk. I think that's bunk. I made sure to watch Dayton a lot. I watched them in the tournament in Charleston, and I thought they were excellent. And again, yeah, they beat teams that right now look like they're going to probably miss the tournament. But it's not as if they're terrible. They're a good team. They're just not good enough to be tournament teams. You know, St. John's, for instance. Cincinnati, for instance. You know, that SMU win didn't look like much the start of the year. They got better. But I do think they're going to get had in Brooklyn. And I think there's going to be 2. And I think if Richmond got to say 15-3 in the conference and made it to the semifinals or even the finals, I think Richmond could actually make it 3. It's not hugely possible, and I'll be honest, I'll be mad as hell if that happens, because the people will probably put the VCU at the Robin Center. But I think Richmond, I wouldn't count Richmond out for an at-large bid either at this point. I mean, you know it as well as anybody. Anybody that's watched bracketology and bad college basketball for a long time, so the bubble always gets worse and worse the closer you get. Teams lose, teams stub their toes against a bad team. Their non-conference, which might have looked impressive in November and December, looks like baloney in March. And I think Richmond doesn't have a lot of bad losses. And see, that's, to me, that's the thing that gives them the best chance, maybe, is the fact that, you know, a lot of teams can get into the tournament simply because they don't have a bad loss. Like, they haven't lost to a terrible team at home or a really terrible team on the road. And when you look at Richmond's losses, tell me what's the really bad loss, because Massachusetts is in the top 100, so you really can't say that. BCU's game, that's almost a quad one game at this point. BCU's in the top 80 in the net. So tell me the bad loss. You could say Wichita State on the road, but that was on the road. So it's not nearly as bad as some of the home losses some of these other teams have got.
Yeah, you know, with Richmond, I think they're gonna have to win a VCU, but then it goes down to like the last two games in the conference play that they have to beat St. Joe's at home and George Mason on the road.
Yeah.
And I think it's like it's like what you tweeted at me or we were talking about a few weeks ago of just the idea of how the A-10 could schedule things much smarter at this time of year by doing the Conference USA style where you pick who plays who to maximize the chances of getting someone like Richmond a bit. Because this season, I mean, how perfect would that have been if they weren't playing sort of mid-tier teams, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But again,
and now Davidson playing three of the top teams in the league, like that doesn't help anyone.
No, it certainly doesn't. But again, you know, Richmond did a lot of good work in non-conference play, I thought, and they don't really have a terrible loss, and most of these other teams on the bubble will. So, you know, if they finish 4-1, and one of those W's is VCU. And they don't, you know, they don't, and they, maybe they lose. Maybe their one loss is George Mason on the road. They win the next four, and then they lose that one. You know, I think they're a halfway decent chance to get it at large if they can at least avoid a banana skin in Brooklyn and at least get to a semifinal, maybe even the final.
Wow, three-bid league, a lot of exciting stuff on the horizon. George, we'll be facing head-to-head VCU St. Joe's Sunday. It was excellent talking with you. Thanks so much. Where can the people find you at?
Oh, I appreciate you guys having me on. Appreciate Hawk Talk SJU. The podcasts are always entertaining. I usually listen to those. I'm riding the bus around walking. You can find me personally at Temp the Rat on Twitter. You can find Rams Rewind at Rams Rewind. You can on Twitter. You can also find Rams Rewind on Podbean and your other podcast platforms.
Download Podbean right now. Go give them a listen so you can preview VCU, see what's been going on in their program from the best, George Templeton. George, thanks so much. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. And as always, the Hawk will never die.